Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, right. I'll be there in like 15 minutes.
Welcome to the DEEB meeting for November. Just a reminder that this DEEB meeting is being recorded. Audio will be posted to the DEEB website. We'll start it off with introductions. I'm Seth Halling with AKS Engineering.
Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
Mike Odrin, McKay Esposito.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Megan Fletcher, Clark County Community Development.
Sherry Jones, Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Michaela Rankin, Clark County Community Development.
Steve Gallup, Clark County Transportation Division Manager.
Ken Leder, Public Works Director for Clark County.
April Firth, Director of Community Development.
Houston Ajo, Ajo Construction. And go into those online.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Remus, and Dan Weisner will not be here today.
Eric Limo, SJ Engineering.
Chris Carl, Clark County Public Works.
I'll go. Brian Cast, City of La Center.
Brent Jennifer
Davis.
Reynolds.
Can't remember, right?
Go ahead, Brent.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Jennifer Reynolds, Clark County Development Engineering.
Laura Hoggett, Clark County Public Works, Capital Programming.
All right. And also want to extend a special welcome to Brian. This being your first meeting here, so welcome.
Thank you.
The first item is a review and adoption of minutes. Do we have any? Has anyone had opportunity to review?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move for approval.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any corrections or discussion? All right. All those in favor, aye.
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 Next item is reviewing upcoming events. Megan, if you could cover those, please.
Thank you. Let's see. Planning Commission is having no work sessions or meetings for the month of November and December. And as for council, at the time of the agenda, for us was printed, the only one that we had was the transportation program for 2024 through 29, annual construction program and fire district impact fees, as well as the stormwater capital plan for the November 1st meeting. And that's all I have.
And then I thought I'd also point out to the group regarding the housing options. They have a forum meeting scheduled for November 16th.
Is that for multifamily?
I think it's a single family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. With that, we'll move to member announcements. Are there any announcements from the DEEB members?
I just had a question. I was kind of, so we haven't wrapped up the single family, so we haven't moved on to multifamily yet? Okay. Any idea when that might be?
When the housing option study gets adopted by council, then they'll move to the multi.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would assume it would be early 2024. Okay. It can't go to council before that.
Very good. Thank you. And then the only other question I had was I brought up, I don't remember if it was last meeting or the meeting before, but a question posed to Brent that we had talked about the two-week review on a counter-complete for fully complete review versus a three-week review for fully complete review, which is what is currently on the checklist, not necessarily in code. Brent, did you have an update on that as to whether or not that is still a thing? It was kind of what we did as far as getting rid of the fully complete certification, and that if one was counter-complete, then their fully complete review would be cut down to 2 weeks instead of three.
Yeah, I looked into that a bit, and it appears, you know, that there was no specific intent to move away from the 14-day commitment. Basically, what happened is it got lost with staffing changes, both at the management level and in the level of planning technician position. We currently only have one planning technician that's trained to do the fully complete review, and we are working on getting our other staff trained up so that we have everybody capable. And I would like to get back to the 14-day, but I think until we have our other planning technicians trained, that it's be a heavy lift to expect them, being really new to it, to be able to meet the 14 days. But definitely I want to work toward it, and hoping by second quarter next year that we can be back into the 14-day mode.
That sounds good, Brent. Thank you. But quick question. Has staff, it's been my understanding that we've typically had one person that has done the fully complete review, though, right? Not multiple people?
That has historically been the case. But, you know, you can see what happens when you only have one person that knows how to do the process. If you have a staffing change, we lose continuity. And that's one of the reasons that this fell through the cracks is because.
Oh, okay.
So my intent is to have all staff capable. I know that there is some benefit with having one go-to person. But there's, you know, there's risks on the other side. And I would like to try, you know, having all of our planning technicians capable, which means that they're all going to need to be doing it to be current and keep their skills fresh.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else with member announcements?
I have a question. The climate conversation, was that added to the council schedule for November? Because it's not on here. I feel like they had, was it like the 30th or something? Because I know they talked about it this week, and I feel like no decisions were made. It wasn't approved.
I'll check there.
There was just an article in the paper about that. I think the council kicked it back to wanted more public input or something. Climate to the
comprehensive plan.
It's community planning.
I guess they can come back to that maybe if you find it, or
I can do some research and I'll let you guys know via email.
Okay. What I do know is if it was taken, there are no more council, there's no more space for council meetings. So if it was taken off, which I think it was, that's why I was in the Columbian, it won't go back until at least January.
All right, well, moving to the second item on the agenda, the 2024-2029 Transportation Improvement Plant Program. Chris, if you could proceed with the presentation.
Yeah, if I could just do a quick introduction of our team. Again, I'm Ken Lader, Public Works Director. Good to see you all. Wanted to thank the board members for your time today. Chris will be doing the presentation, and also joining us online is Laura Hoggett from our programming group. And to my right here is Steve Gallup, our Transportation Division Manager. I don't think we have anyone else online, but we'll all be available for questions after Chris's presentation if you have anything for us. So thank you. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you, Ken. For the record, Chris Carl, Clark County Public Works Capital Programming Manager. As Ken said, Laura Hoggett is in attendance as well, who is a vital part of our team. What I'm going to bring forth to you today is the efforts of many across our entire team of public works for our 2024-2029 Transportation Improvement Program update, dated for last week until the meeting moved, so I apologize for the date there. quick agenda. What we're going to go through is some principles and legalities of why we put our program, why we have to put our program through. Comparison between our 20-year capital facility plan, CFP, to our six-year transportation improvement program, TIP. The evaluation system we use for both our large capital projects as well as our ongoing program projects, as well as some project mapping with capital facility plans, six-year TIP project map specifically.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris. Yes? Megan. Can you share your screen with the presentation while you're going through it?
Yeah, I thought I was. You can't see it?
No, we can't see it.
How about now?
I can see it.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, we can't see it in the meeting room.
Okay. Is there any way you could do it on your side, Megan? I have a red screen that says sharing, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Okay, we're going to put it up here. Okay, we got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Just let us know when we need to change the slide, please.
Okay, what slide are you on there?
We're on the first page.
The cover, yeah.
Okay,
cover
if you
page.
Could go to the next slide, please, Megan.
Thank you.
Our agenda. So I was going through this, and I apologize it wasn't on screen, but the guiding principles and legalities of why we put our program, we have to put our program through. We're going to go over the 20-year capital facility plan and how it transforms it from our to our six-year transportation improvement program, the evaluation system we use, some project maps of both our CFP and our TIP, as well as our TIP construction schedule, some project highlights, and where we are as far as our schedule of our 2024-2029 TIP adoption. Next slide, please. Here's some principles and legalities of how we operate. Our council has principles in regard to debt service, safety and preservation of existing assets, and capital projects is where this program comes into play. Some legal requirements, some RCWs and WACs that drive the program and why we have to come before public to do so. Next slide, please. Here's a flowchart of how our program becomes about. It starts underneath the Growth Management Act. And we develop a 20-year comprehensive plan. From that 20-year comprehensive plan is a 20-year capital facility plan. Large projects like our 179th projects, previous 119th Street projects, and future projects, larger projects will come in directly through the CFP, where smaller projects, bridge projects, sidewalk projects like Highway 99, they come in also through the capital facility plan, but underneath the ongoing programs themselves. So I'll get more into that when we go through our presentation today. But from our capital facility plan, we prioritize the projects, rank them, and bring them into our program. And this basis is the six-year TIP. From there, we also have a one-year annual construction program. That's really just the first year of our TIP, detailed with spending and funding of where all the dollars are coming from. And from there, we develop the projects themselves, capital road projects. Next slide, please. Here's a brief layout of how we evaluate our projects. The large part of it is safety-driven, economic development and mobility. We also have other aspects of environmental impacts, public agency outside support and leveraging, where we have more funding for a project and makes that a little bit more affordable for the county funding. So that could be a reason why a project might jump in over another project if there's specific funding to that type of project. Next slide, please. Here's our map of our capital facility plan. So these are our large capital projects. Our ongoing projects are not mapped. They're brought in as we develop each program. Next slide. The next two maps are going to be our TIP maps, the actual projects. Here's a north view of our county. And the next slide, please. Our southern view of Clark County. And the next slide will have both the capital facility plan and the TIP overlaid. So if you could go to that one, please. You could see here the purple were the capital facility plan projects with the TIP projects in both red and blue. meaning our larger capital projects, and you could see where they overlay. The green map dots and lines, those are going to be direct ongoing program projects that, again, are not from the capital, not mapped on the capital facility plan directly as they come in through the ongoing programs. Next slide, please. The next three slides are going to be our active projects and our estimated construction dates for each. The first section here, our large, our 179th Street area projects, which most of you are probably mostly interested in. A few of our larger capital projects below that, 99th Street, which I will detail as a completed project in the next slides to follow. We will be finishing that at the tail end of this year with some slight carryover work, finish up work into next year. 152nd Avenue between Patton Parkway and North 99th Street is our next project from a large capital. And then we get into our 72nd Avenue development as well towards the tail end of our program. Next slide, please, Megan. The next two slides here will detail some of our larger projects under the five main ongoing programs: bridge and culverts, road preservation, and rural road. And next slide, please, Megan. And then our sidewalks and ADA program, as well as our transportation safety improvement program. Next slide, please, Megan. Some of our 2023 completed projects: Hazeldale Avenue sidewalk improvements that put some sidewalk in from 99th Street up to 117th Street. Northeast 99th Street, which I mentioned previously and have some photos before, after, enduring below. Two of our strengthening bridge bundle projects, one and two. Bundle number one had six locations, bundle number two has three. A Northeast 134th Corridor Adaptive Traffic Signal Project, Davis Bridge, and our annual ADA compliance, HMA overlays, and guardrail projects. And again, some of our photos before, during, and after of the 99th Street, 99th Street being a corridor, sorry, a roundabout corridor, which you see one of on the photo on the bottom right. And next slide, please, Megan. Some photos of our Hazeldale Avenue sidewalk improvements, as well as our Davis Bridge project. Next slide, please, Megan. These photos were before you last year as 2022 completed projects, 10th Avenue being the big one. 182nd Avenue at SR 500 was a project that was managed and delivered by WashDOT, and we were fortunate to be a partner with. Manley and Munch Road, some of our rural road projects. Next slide. Here's some just the photos of 182nd at SR 500 and Manley Road. And next slide, please, Megan. Are we on the schedule and steps?
Yep.
Part of our process here is of why we need to go before public. So that involves a work session and a hearing with the Planning Commission, as well as a work session and hearing with the Clark County Council. And we, excuse me, my dogs are. Hey, sorry about that. Where we will be adopting our program on November 28th in two weeks. Next slide, please. For anybody interested, there's a link here or a website that can be clicked. For more information on our program, where we have the entirety of our scoring, as well as the documents from last year's program, which will be replaced with the 2024 to 2029 program once it goes through adoption in the coming weeks. With that, I will turn it over to any questions or comments.
Any questions from the board?
I do, just some clarifications. Thank you, Chris, that's very thorough. On the maps, where they're looking at the updated list, you have some abbreviations here, and I'm trying to figure them out. You have RRIP. I assume that that means rural road improvements.
Yeah, that's from the capital facility plan side. I forgot what they stood for. I could follow up if nobody else knows about that. But that's the CFP lingo that we don't really get into, but
okay, because then there's another one that says UAI, and it looks like it's in, they're all intersections. I didn't know if they were intersection upgrades or ADA upgrades at those intersections or what. It would just be nice to know what those meant.
Yeah, I will follow. I will definitely follow up. Gary Albrecht, I will get in touch with him and ask what these are.
Okay.
In the past, I asked, it really doesn't pertain to our side, but I'll get you that answer. Thank you. Good question.
Yeah, that would be great. And then just let Megan know, and she can pass it off to the rest of the members here. Thank
will
you.
Do. Thank you.
Got a question about coordination with the City of Vancouver and what happens with potential annexation if you guys are halfway through a design on a capital facilities plan or funded it and the city annexes it. What happens to your plan? How does it transition? Just kind of curious what that process is.
Yeah, Eric, I can speak to that. This is Ken Later. Certainly we'd be coordinating with the City of Vancouver far ahead of time of any phasing for annexation. It's typical that annexation wouldn't happen in such a way that it's sudden like that and would just overlap an ongoing project that we have. So I don't have a specific answer about what would happen if it did, except that in the planning process for annexation, we'd probably work with the city to phase it in such a way that that wouldn't occur mid-project like that. It's a great question.
Mike, Laura put in the chat, UAI is urban arterial intersection. Intersection.
Thank you, Laura.
This is just sort of an odd question, I guess, but I've been in a few pre-apps where we've had frontage that was recently improved by the county, and staff has made comments like that the improvements that the county do don't always follow the county's own road standards. and so, you know, we're still required to verify it and make upgrades, even if it was a relatively recent one. So,
or apply for a road mod.
Yeah, or apply for a road mod. So I guess my question is, I mean, if you aren't following the county road standards, why not? And
I can speak to that, Ryan. So great question. So we, where we don't do road modifications ourselves for our internal designs, we do record and go through a road design deviation process. So it's very similar, except that it's where we're documenting our deviation from design and usually working with local programs to represent what we've done as a change. So it should parallel the process that you're doing in development, and that's why you'd still be required to do a road modification if you were trying to match or align with us.
And just to add on to that, we had a recent project where a similar situation came up on, and the county had performed the design deviation, and so therefore community development accepted that as a road modification, and we didn't have to make a change to that. So,
but did you then have to submit your own road modification?
Well, there are other items that required a road modification, so we still
have
to do
that. Well, there's always that. Sure.
But for that specific item, we didn't have to include that in our road modification.
Okay, because I have had situations where it was a county road project capital improvement plan, and like you said, in the pre-app, it says, this does not currently meet our standard. You will need to apply for a road mod, or you'll need to bring it up to code. And it's like, so that's just frustrating, staff, you know, whoever's listening, that it's a thing.
And for the record, our pre-app note said the same thing, that we had to do a road modification, but we were able to, you know, dig up the design deviation and submit that in place of including on the road mod. So. But there, my understanding is there may be some older public projects that maybe there isn't the record of the design deviation request, and so we still had to go through it on those ones.
Yeah, this is Jennifer Reynolds with Development Engineering. I can speak to it a little bit, but thanks, Seth. Yeah, that's what it essentially is there are older projects, like anything And I won't give a date, but it's generally the older projects that don't have a design deviation in the file, in the public works files that we can find, that are generally subject to the road mods with the preliminary land use applications. But anything that's like fairly newer, I'd say 2009 or newer-ish, usually has those deviations in the file.
Yeah, the ones I'm familiar with were all much older than 2009. Yeah. So that's good to know. Thanks, Jennifer.
Chris, one question for you is this update to the CFP, is there any, or the TIP, is there any big changes from the prior year in terms of, you know, changes where something was taken off the list or, you know, what are the new ones that were added maybe, if you could summarize those?
Sure. Ken, you could also jump in here if you want. Megan, can you go up a few slides to the first tips slide with the map that has the legend of the project names?
Yeah, we've got that on there. The first schedule map, Chris, is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, that. Second one down there.
Michaela, so, I think you had it.
Is it Michaela running that? So thank you, Michaela. So in that list, I'm not sure if they're added there. Lakeshore is one of the new ones. Salmon Creek realignment, I think we had on there previously, but those are going to be our newer projects that we're adding. The other changes will be the change of our schedules for the construction estimated dates. Mostly the 179th Street projects are shifting to 2028, mostly. Another one will go in before that, 29th Avenue. But the majority of the 179th Street projects will be in 2028 start construction, hopefully.
Yeah, so just to summarize that a little differently, we haven't really pulled anything off, but we did shift some things out based on our permitting needs and the construction schedule. As you can see, a lot of those 179th larger projects are shifted out a little bit to 2028. That should align, we hope, with the interchange work that WSDOT has planned. And then, as you know, our estimates as we get towards the edge of the tip in 6 years out are not as solid as they are on the front end. So we would expect an adjustment at least to one or two of those projects as we get closer to the finishing our preliminary engineering.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, this is Brian. So looking at the six-year TIP map and then the 20-year CFP map, I see a few projects in North County on the six-year TIP, some bridge projects, but then looking at the 20-year CFP, doesn't look like there's any projects north of Battleground. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the 20-year CFP, those are going to be the larger scale projects. A lot of times in the Battleground, the more rural areas, those projects like a Manly Road, Munch Road, they'll come in through our ongoing program, our rural road ongoing program. The 20-year capital facility plan map there is not, it's got a note there on the bottom that the ongoing programs are not on the map. So that's where your bridges and your sidewalks will come in. These are the larger scale
capacity sort of projects,
segments and intersection projects.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Chris and Ken.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is the type 2 applications. It was an item that I guess we had brought up. It was in our work plan. But basically allowing concurrent review of preliminary entitlement and then final engineering. It's a process currently that the City of Vancouver has that's streamlined. It's one that's worked well on some of the type 2 projects that we've seen there. Wanted to bring it to the group as, you know, and also for the county to provide input on, you know, the overall, you know, idea behind it and whether it's something that would be able to be worked into the county's plan. And I don't know if it's worth going through kind of these. There was a couple of handouts that were included in the agenda. Yeah, if you want to pull up that 90-day streamline review process, the So I guess just a real brief overview. Essentially, the pre-application conference, there are some projects that are small enough that you can do a waiver for the projects, but then essentially you prepare a full application, including your final engineering plans, go to a pre-submittal meeting. Sometimes the city recently hasn't even been requiring that meeting to occur. They'll just take the documents, do a quick, fully complete review. Essentially, at that point, they're reviewing for fully complete and that making sure that the civil drawings have at least 90% design complete. Those plans are then routed, and it's a 28-day review for the first round. You get your first engineering review back at that point. The one thing to point out, the clock on this 90-day process that they have stops at each point when the city returns the document to the applicant. So it's assuming, you know, if you could turn it around that same day, maybe you could hit 90 days, but it is allowing concurrent review of final civil and the land use, which in the a lot of the type two reviews, we've had a couple in the county recently, which were, you know, part of a previous industrial plat. And, you know, a lot of the land use aspects are already worked out, and seems like it would be a really good opportunity to allow businesses to come into, you know, open their doors quicker, you know, more likely that they're even going to find and build in the county. And then also, you know, it applies to short plats, and, you know, those are typically much simpler, straightforward, and, you know, the engineering part of it is pretty minimal, a little easier lift. But I'd asked Jennifer earlier if she'd be able to provide input on this from an engineering aspect, and April, I guess, if you or Brent have anything from land use.
I am. So we've looked at this, because thank you for giving this us this ahead of time. We already have better timelines than City of Vancouver. We have 78 days, just saying.
Disclosure, they're trying to match that, by the way.
We have done this before with the 60-day review. What we experienced is, it was a lot of work on the land use side, and there wasn't an incentive or a penalty for the consultant to meet our timelines, which then pushed us back. So, like our last one, we had Sifton Elementary that tried to go through the 60-day. It took them 133 days, and that's consultant time. So, but if we do the plan to meet 60 days, it pushes us back. Here's what I will say. I think that we are willing and kind of excited to try concurrent without the time frame on it, because our time frame is already better. So doing a final construction plan review at the same time as a preliminary land use review, I think that we will try that as an experiment, and especially with those type twos. And we have two right now that just came in that probably are perfect candidates for it for us to try.
Okay,
cool.
And just to point out that the 90 days is at the point at which you'd be able to hold a pre-construction conference. So in that part, it's a little bit different. You know, they're issuing the staff report at day 70. So it's in the big savings comes from the ability to submit and review, you know, the final engineering documents and those same time frame.
And there's a couple of touch points. We're going to have to still work on it a little bit, because there's a couple of touch points where one can't move further until we have, and so we want to figure that out. Also, I think at the beginning, so we did, because, and actually this was right when I started, I was still the permit center manager. We started concurrent building permit reviews for commercial, and that works about 50% of the time right now. It's not great, but we have you submit an email saying that you're accepting the financial and time that it might cost extra if you make changes after something's already been approved. So I'm going to have you do that too. If we do concurrent, I will have to have an email that says that you may incur financial or time burdens from a concurrent review if you tried to change something that's already been approved. But yeah, we're willing to try concurrent.
Mr. Chair. Again. I just wanted to kind of give you our experience with the concurrent review in the city of Vancouver. It's worked out great. It really, really has. And the reason why it has, number one, particularly for those, for lack of a better term, more sophisticated firms and consultants, they already know the code. And it's been very clear that we know that we've already met the code. There won't be any site changes. And if they are, they're very minimal. Maybe from a ADA standpoint, we've probably, I couldn't even begin to think of how many, we do most of our projects in the city of Vancouver through the 90-day review, except for the larger, say, multifamily projects. Anything that's a small acre two commercial site, we will almost always go through that process. It's worked real well. Yes, their clock does stop when they return the red lines. We try to turn our red lines around in a week or two and then try to get it back in. But here's the other part of this, April, is that our clients are already having us, regardless of the jurisdiction, proceed with final engineering during the land use review. So we're already at risk, you know, doing that. And the reason why are the carrying costs on any particular project. And they want to be as, they will take the risk of there being a possible change in the layout of the site based on the land use review, just based on the fact that, hey, we're ready to submit the second we get our staff report. And most clients, in fact, I think all of our clients are saying, nope, go ahead, start. Just move forward. If there's a change that needs to be made, we'll take that risk. And it's because of the carrying costs and the fact that every day costs them money. So I'm happy to hear that the county is willing to entertain that. I don't think that there's any issue with regards to we can maybe work out the timelines. This has worked out really well. The city knows that sometimes there are changes. They understand that sometimes the dynamics of a project where a client says, oh, hey, by the way, we got a new tenant in here. We have to increase the size of the commercial building by another 2,000 feet. That'll make some changes. We'll resubmit it. They work with us as far as addressing those changes. And we know that this 90 days is only their time. So when we submit, it's only for their time. And it's, I don't know how you guys have done with it, but it's been very successful, and I'm glad to hear that the county's entertaining it.
I have two things. Road mods have to be done before you submit it.
That's the same with the city, is that okay. You have to submit any road mods and the traffic study 2 weeks before.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And then the second piece, I think I just forgot the second piece.
Okay, well, you can let us know.
Just some observations. I think Mike hit it on the head with that. That's kind of become the norm in the city of Vancouver.
Yep.
So in the county, it's an exception. So they just have adjusted over time. I think the first few that the city did, it was probably a little bit awkward. It didn't quite work well. But since it's become the norm, I mean, almost all the ones we do in the city of Vancouver, too, are under this process. They even do it for subdivisions. You can, upon request, it's a little different. Usually you just get first engineering review back, but that's still a huge savings. But here's, we have two. Yeah. One different piece that makes Clark a little more challenging than the city of Vancouver is water and sewer. And the city of Vancouver reviews water and sewer, and they have a system that goes out to the consultants. So if we're doing an expedited in the county, it's just transportation, stormwater, erosion control. There's still those other consultants that add an extra layer of complexity. So not that it can't be worked through, but I think that's maybe one of the challenges the county's faced in doing it as successfully as a city. Not that they can't overcome it, but just observation again.
And that reminded me of my other point, which was time improvement. We're hoping there's time improvement on our side for this, too, because if there isn't, and I don't mind trying harder at the beginning to make sure we get through that, but if there isn't time improvement, then I start affecting the timeline for everybody else, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I just echo what Mike said. I'd say we do 90-95% of our applications in the city under that combined review. It's just it's more efficient, frankly, for on the engineering side, as long as we've worked out the details of our site, compliance with the planning codes ahead of time, it's a much more efficient process. And on the owner side, it, frankly, it's not just about holding costs. A lot of times it's about being able to complete a sale or a purchase from another landowner. Landowners don't want to hear that they're going to be sitting for 2 years before a buyer executes a contract. So, I mean, this is huge on industrial projects in just so many ways. So I appreciate that you're looking to be flexible. And I honestly think it's a win-win long-term. There may be some bumps initially, but, you know, there are businesses that won't do business in Clark County because of how long it takes to get a project through permitting. They're going to go somewhere else. So this isn't just about, you know, developer convenience or holding costs. It's about the health of the community from a business perspective. So that's what I have to say.
I would agree with that. Thank you, Andrew.
I guess, Jennifer, do you have any comments or ideas, suggestions, or I guess as if the county is open to, you know, looking into it further and, as you know, is there feedback, I guess, at this point from development engineering?
I mean, April and I had discussed this when you first kind of told me that you were going to present this at DEEB. And so she's kind of expressed what my concerns were. It's really in the past going through the 60-day review, and I know that that is more compressed than what you guys are proposing with this 90-day, it was all about the county was under the gun to get their reviews done, whereas when it went back to the applicant, there wasn't that same level of urgency sometimes. So that was my only concern with this. My own personal opinion, having gone, you know, projects gone through a streamlined process, especially the type twos, it helps the process. So I personally kind of like a streamlined review, but I want to make sure we're thinking about all the pitfalls before we jump straight in to it. But that's, yeah.
Cool. And we'll be around if you want to like ask us or, you know, ask us what would you do or how should we approach this situation as we kind of the county rolls this out. Let us know. We've been through it. We've been through it in other jurisdictions as well. And in fact, sometimes even in the county, I think maybe one or two, but we've actually just finished final civil plans, submitted them with our land use review, and without there being a formal final engineering review, just to have them done, you know, and move on and maybe get an early look at some of that stuff too. So, but if there are any hiccups or roadblocks or, you know, speed bumps along the way that you'd like some advice for, reach out to us.
Okay. I think we have two that we might experiment with them already, two projects we have in right now.
How's your guys' workload and staffing right now for resources on engineering?
Really good.
Good. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good time to do it then, because what I was worried about is if you have that situation where you're behind already, and then you have a new project that comes in that has to meet these timelines and the other ones don't, they kind of get pushed to the front of the line and the other ones have to get pushed out because you only have so many resources. When the city did it, it was right after the recession. They didn't really have any projects. It was very few. And when they came back online, they started with this. And that's just kind of become the norm. So it's, you know.
And one thing about the city process is that you have to ask and you have to get an okay from staff that they will accept it as a streamlined review.
Yeah, we're trying to debate that one right now. Do we take it in and say, oh, this is a good one, which is the two applications we have right now. Oh, this would be a good one to try it with. Or do we have you ask? We're trying to debate that, which way we want to do that.
All right, anything else on that topic? Hearing none, we'll move to public comment. Houston, do you have anything today? All right. And is there anyone online that would like to provide public comment? Doesn't look like there's anyone from the public. With that, our next DEEB meeting is scheduled for December 7th. And
Seth, before we adjourn, we'll want to look at what is going to be on our agenda for the next couple of months. I know that we've got a work plan. We should probably take a look at that. This was on the work plan. You know, this is maybe one of those boxes we can check off to, depending on how it goes. It's, but let's take a look at what else is on there, because there might be some upfront work that needs to be done before we tackle the next thing. Also, if staff has anything, or again, I don't know if we have any counselors on today's meeting, but if there's anything on a, from a big picture standpoint that the council wants us to review, now would be a good time to bring it up.
And I know a lot of the work plan. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just noticed, this is Jeff Riston. I just noticed I'm a Jeff Prynne guest. So for the record, I just wanted to let you know I was here.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
Last name, apparently.
Nice to hear you.
Yeah, well, I've been here.
I do have one announcement that I forgot that I wanted to bring up. Okay. Cottage homes, narrow lot developments, we've been allowing a reduced setback from 10 feet to 5 feet, and we were contacted by Clark Public Utilities, and we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's not happening, so I just want to give you a heads up that we won't be able to do that reduced setback because they aren't able to get what they need.
That's for the
cottage and narrow lot.
Non-combustible... Oh. Setback area.
What is that setback to?
It's the, so the issue's in between the driveways, so it's front setback. It's in between the driveways. That 5 feet is not enough in between the driveways to get everything that needs to get in.
Oh.
Telephone peds.
Total.
Yes.
Total. It, so it's not the setback from like transformers to the building. It's more getting all the equipment in there.
We've done like 4 foot though. We used from 5 foot to 4 foot when they're 9 foot. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. Start just getting in a conversation mode. We've done the 4 foot setbacks quite often. Do they have a problem with that? What is the minimum they need?
I might need Jennifer's help on this, but I'm pretty sure that we cannot reduce the setbacks in for cottage and narrow lot development.
What if they can plan it where, because they don't have to put all those boxes every between every single lot. They just need them like one every 4 to 8 homes. So if you plan for it in that and you give them a spot and it's all worked out in advance, couldn't that work and separate? And it seems like there's multiple solutions to the problem.
I might suggest, April, if you know who brought this up, have them send through the technical details.
And Jennifer was there too, so she might have more technical details than what I have.
Sorry, Jennifer.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, I don't think more technical. It was just the way they're looking at it. It's all, I think what Eric said is like they don't need them. I mean, they do need it, almost like the electrical box goes in between one set of driveways, and then it's the water meter. And that's just kind of how they're laying it out. So if it can be laid out ahead of time and during final engineering and construction plan review, it's thought about at that process rather than waiting to the building permit, then I think that's the main goal, or I guess their main point.
They don't even look at the plans until we have final engineering approval.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's more on your end to make sure it's going to work. The designers are that they're considering these issues.
Yeah, it seems like it could be done. I mean, we send the plans out when we have a draft, and then it just sits there, just so they know it's coming. And then they finally do it when they have final engineering approval. I just feel like there's a little bit of coordination and having more people at the table, because sometimes we have these rules for a special situation. They work on all these projects. Someone got frustrated on one project, and all of a sudden we have a new rule that messes up every project in the future, and it's not necessary. So maybe that's a topic that we can look at. Maybe what we should do is have the person who was that you guys met with over at CPU, have them to one of our meetings and come up with a process that actually works. And maybe it is like it might not be as big of a problem as we think. It might be a one-off, and now we're creating new rules and new restrictions on the one-off, but we don't really know.
We asked if it was one-off, and they said no, it was a reoccurring problem, because we asked the same thing.
Who was it that you talked to?
I can't remember.
Was it Nick?
Nick from the water department.
Russ. Oh, he's the water department.
Knudsen. Russ.
Oh, Russ. Russ. Yeah. Oh, well, let's Russ have Russ come in. Maybe then we can understand it. Yeah.
So we don't do a whole lot of the narrow where we're deviating from the 5-foot setback, but I do enough building on this side and the east side of Washington to see how the driveways are laid out. So if it's an issue of spacing with like reducing down to 4, like on this side of Washington, a good portion of the builders will bring their driveways all the way out to the edge of foundation. Now in other parts of the state, they only bring their driveway about a foot outside of the garage door. So you're at an 18-foot driveway instead of a 20-foot driveway. So right in there, you could potentially make up your space for deviating from the 5-foot down to a 4-foot setback and still maintain the 10-foot between the driveways for their boxes. And then some of the other PUDs we deal with drop the boxes underground. They put vaults in, which is a little bit more expensive. But there's potentially some ways to get around a few of those issues.
I'm curious too, if 10 foot is the minimum that they have, what happens when they're townhomes and they're attached and you have a 0-foot setback? It seems like whatever was done then to solve that problem could be done to solve the same problem as a little narrower setback.
I might recommend that we invite Russ to come to our next meeting.
And Russ is the water department, not power.
Okay. So
we might need
We might need
to. Yeah, whoever was involved in that, it just seems like there's solutions here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they might be looking at a conflict between water and power, which I've got into with other jurisdictions, that they want their water and power done a certain way. They want them separated on the lot. They want power on one side, water on the other. Some could care less, and you know, it just comes down to the jurisdiction.
Yeah, and then there's other things where sometimes they would prefer the water meters outside the driveways. But there's no reason they need to be. They can be H20 loaded and don't even need to be that usually for a driveway, but it can be done.
Yeah.
You can put it under the pavement.
Yeah, City of Vancouver, from my understanding, I mean, the last time I was there, they didn't care if we put driveways or meters right in the driveway as long as we gave them a heads up and they put the drivables in.
We just need to be more creative as a building community and agencies. If we're looking at changing these standards and doing more narrow and narrower lots, we're going to need more of these things. I mean, I can come up with a bunch of issues. I mean, how about garbage collection? Yeah, all these things become an issue, and they're competing interests. I know, but they are. And we have to figure out a way to at least have a solution to it without one piece saying, my competing interest is more important than all the other competing interests, and it's firm. It just has to be this way. No one can really do that in this environment. We all need to find a way to balance these competing interests and find solutions. So I think if we get enough people together and they understand some of our challenges and we understand their challenges, there's an opportunity for a solution.
And
so
I guess on the plus side, it's not really a plus side for anybody, but with the energy code pretty much pushing gas out of the subdivisions, they should have more room in the trenches.
I was looking on the website, and it looks like the climate change and resiliency. Is that what we're talking about? Okay. They actually have a hearing to be continued from November 7th. That's on the 28th of this month at 10 a.m. So I'll write notes and email that to you guys.
All right. With that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.